This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Pucci, he flips over to the left side. He's going to be playing with Olli Jokinen and Blake Wheeler. Wheeler dropping to the right wing on that third line. But, I mean, the numbers don't matter at this point. And then the fourth line of Tangrady, Wright, and Thorburn. So let's get started. Let's look at the forward group for the Winnipeg Jets. Dustin Byfuglien, right winger. Your initial thoughts, Richard?
You know, I like the move, Drew, because I said last week on the show I thought it was time to move him up to forward. His defensive game is just lacking to such a great extent. And his skill set from the right side, being able to protect the puck, things that he's able to do from the defensive end, I think he can still exhibit that type of skill set from the right side, and he cannot be as much of a liability in his own zone. So I like the move. It allows Trouba and Bogosian to increase their minutes, which I think they can certainly handle. Those guys are both reliable workhorses, and it'll probably limit the third pairing's ice time, and I'm fine with that as well. I think this, you know, the burden will shift a little bit to Mark Stewart in terms of in that top four role, but so be it. I think this is right now a situation where the Jets ought to try this, and I think, you know, you look at it from two perspectives, the defensive end and the liability that Byfuglien has become in terms of his decision-making, and you also look at it from the forward perspective. What you've done is you've pushed Chris Thorburn from the third line, from the top nine, who's going to play your significant minutes, to the fourth line, and I think that is significant in itself. So what you have now is nine forwards. Wheeler wasn't at practice this morning, as far as I could tell. I believe he has the flu, but I think he's going to play. We're not positive. Kane's not going to play today. We can talk about that a bit later. But the point is, you listed, you know, Ladd, Little, Byfuglien, Odell, Scheifele, Frolik, Setoguchi, Jokinen, and Wheeler. All of those guys can produce offensively. You know, obviously some can more than others, but all of those guys can produce offensively, and I think that's a good thing.
And Richie, I think the most important aspect of this is the timing. And, you know, you heard Claude Noel say that desperate times call for desperate measures. The Jets have lost four games in a row. The Jets have quickly fallen back into the spot that they were before, really looking up at the standings right now, 12th in the Western Conference. Yeah. So the timing is really good. Why not use this time to have Dustin Byfuglien at forward against the Columbus Blue Jackets, a team that has a lot of talented players but isn't by any means a top team in the Eastern Conference, a team that has probably the strength in goal and on defense. But, you know, you got to try this out, guys, because I can't remember a situation in the recent past where you had a defenseman who was third in the NHL in scoring and you're moving him to forward. But as we've talked about, Dustin Byfuglien is a unique player in that he really is a natural forward. I mean, if you look at how he's made up and his strengths, he really is suited to being a forward. And when has he really had the most overall success as an NHLer? It was as a forward with the Chicago Blackhawks. And he's been used as a defenseman starting when he was traded over to the Atlanta Thrashers. Mm-hmm. And he's played big-time minutes, Richie, and we've talked about sometimes Byfuglien's playing 28, 30 minutes a game, but he can't handle that. And he struggles with his defensive assignments, as Richie mentioned. So the timing for me really works. And to be honest with you guys, you know, you put all the analysis aside, I'm just really excited to watch him play because really his offensive game right now is, this might be the best he's ever played offensively, but defensively, I think, you know, you're seeing so many different blunders and mistakes that they're almost forced to do that. I almost think that, you know, when Richie mentioned that on last weekend's show, it really made sense, and they've practiced all this week with Byfuglien at forward. Obviously, the Evander Kane injury opens up that spot because Blake Wheeler comes down to the third line, Odell goes to the second line. You try him out at right wing. That's where he's probably most comfortable. But it makes sense, and you know, I hope that this turns into a long-term kind of, I don't want to call it project, but kind of, you know, a long-term change. Not necessarily meaning Byfuglien's going to be a forward for the rest of his career, but I hope that it's not just a one-game or two-game thing.
Well, speaking of that, the last time Byfuglien played any minutes at forward for this team was that game in Montreal, I believe, at some point in the season last year.
Long Island and Montreal. Well, end of Long Island game, most of Montreal game.
Okay, end of Long Island, most of Montreal, and it was not a success.
Well, I mean, to Tazzy's point, though, how do you know if it's a success or not? I mean, the skating issue, last year his weight was a bigger issue than it is now, but what Ezzy's saying is, how do you know in a game and a half or a game and a quarter if it's working? You don't know.
You don't know. I agree with you there. Do you have any concern? I mean, he's always expressed that he prefers to be a defenseman. And it's worth, when he played junior hockey, he was a defenseman in junior hockey. Mm-hmm. The only time he played forward was on that cup-winning Blackhawks team.
They couldn't crack. I mean, the defense didn't need him.
Right.
But what he had, they had other players who could do that.
That's right. He was a unique skill set, almost like a specialty player to come in and play in that very specific role. Do you have any concerns with him buying into being a forward, or do you think he's going to be the proper professional about it?
I mean, I think he'll be as what he would be on defense, Drew. From what I can gather, he's not overly enthusiastic about the prospect about being pushed for, pushed to forward. But at the same time, you have to do what it takes to help the team, and he said that. So I don't think, I think he's going to do, maybe he won't play with the same enthusiasm he played defense. I don't know if that'll actually affect his overall, production. I think he's still going to give it. He's still going to play hard. He might not enjoy it as much, but I think this is something that's worth trying at this point, which is why I said it last week. This is based on roster construction too. If the Jets had top nine scoring, I don't think this would be necessary. Although it would be necessary for me to cut down his ice time and pick different spots to play in. But the Jets don't have the luxury of that. They have been playing Chris Thorburn, as I said last week, in the top nine for a prolonged period of time. And Chris Thorburn is probably the most vocal guy in the locker room, as far as we can tell. Very light, but well-liked, brings a lot of energy. But you put Chris Thorburn on the top line of the Jets in 82-game season, you'll be lucky if he gets 10 goals. He's not that type of player. He's not a scorer. He's a checking guy. He's a fighter and all that stuff. So they need to infuse. They need an infusion of offense. And if they're not going to do it from outside the organization, and they have an option of doing it from within the organization, and I don't mean from the AHL, I mean from within the actual roster, then it's probably time. Plus, you have the strength of your team, allegedly, is on defense, specifically right defense. So if Trouba and Bogosian can eat those minutes, which I believe they can, then why not do it?
And Richie, a couple of other things that I really like about the Byfuglien move is that you put him on the top line. You're not putting Byfuglien on the third line or the fourth
absolutely.
Line. You're putting him on the top line with a guy that he's played with before. He's played with Andrew Ladd before in
good
Chicago,
point.
Right?
Yeah.
Obviously, he's played with him in the Jets, but I mean as a forward. So you put him right on the top line, and then that actually allows Eric O'Dell to go on the second line. But with Dustin Byfuglien, I'm so optimistic about this because I think this will have a positive impact on his future with the Jets, because for the last 2, 3, 4 weeks, all we've heard about is Dustin Byfuglien a trade candidate? Are there teams out there who are buyers that would want Dustin Byfuglien before the trade deadline? And I've actually argued against it, and I know that he has his defensive shortcomings, but I think if you take him off the team, you're just losing so much offensively. But as far as going forward, if you're saying, okay, well, Byfuglien's got great offensive instincts and he produces the numbers, as we said, he's third in overall in defenseman scoring, but we just can't rely on him for 20 or 22 minutes a game, let alone 30 minutes a game. So this has the ability to give him a spot going forward, guys. He's got 2 years left on his contract. If he ends up playing well, and again, the way I think a good analogy for Byfuglien moving to forward, Richie, is Brent Burns. I didn't think Brent Burns was going to work out. Brent Burns has worked out perfectly
Brent
on
Burns
San Jose.
Brent Burns of the San Jose Sharks. He was traded to the Sharks from the Wild, where he had been a defenseman, and he played defense for the Sharks when he initially started there.
Brent Burns was a great defenseman. Brent Burns also had his shortcomings. He was more of kind of an offensive defenseman. I'm a big fan of
better
Brent Burns.
Better defensively than Byfuglien, but yeah.
Absolutely. He's better defensively than Byfuglien, but a big guy, and he's able to now use his speed. Brent Burns is similar to a Blake Wheeler, not maybe as good of a skater now, but he's a bigger guy, and he's worked out, and he's produced on San Jose.
Yeah.
More physical. So I didn't think Brent Burns was going to work out. I kind of looked at it, and I said Todd McClellan is going to put Brent Burns up at forward, try to get him going offensively, and then he'll go back to defense. Well, 2 years later, Brent Burns is still playing forward for the San Jose Sharks. So this could work out, and Dustin Byfuglien, I mean, I think we'd all agree, Richie and Drew, that I don't think Dustin Bufflin's going to be the first-line right winger going forward for the Jets. They're putting him there because they want him to go right into the fire and play with two really good offensive players, established guys. But if you have Dustin Byfuglien as your third line right winger,
making the money he is now, you have to take that into account, but you want him to at least be the second line right winger ahead of Frolik in reality. But I think at least your point with regards to Brent Burns is well taken. Brent Burns, now granted, he plays with Joe Thornton, so it's certainly a lot easier to look better beside Joe Thornton, as you can probably gather.
I could look good beside Joe Thornton.
Well, Devin Setoguchi can look good beside, if you've watched him play this year, you'd wonder how. Brent Burns is a guy that's a big body as. He's got a great shot. Great shot. Big body. And he's physical. And he's really taking the point forward. Now, he had in the past as well in juniors. But the point is, big body, right-handed shooting guy, plays the right wing. Yeah, there certainly are some similarities there. I think Brent Burns probably a little more enthusiastic about playing forward than Byfuglien, but let's see how it goes. And
back,
let's see
back
what
to
happens.
Drew's question, Richie. I think that Byfuglien is going to embrace this. I mean,
well, I don't think he has thus far. Well, I'm not saying he's absolutely diametrically opposed to the idea because he's going to do it regardless. He's not saying I'm not doing it, but I don't think that is his foremost preference. But let's see. You know, the thing is about that, Ezzy, is if you have comp, if you succeed, if he suddenly starts producing, which may or may not happen, but if he does, then doesn't he get more confidence and maybe
yes.
he does take to it? Maybe he says, you know what, maybe I like this.
And
like,
I
when you succeed, you always feel better. You know, Mike Camilleri was talking about it in the Calgary Herald. When you want to be happy, you want to produce, you want to succeed. And if he does, maybe that changes his mindset on these things.
And there's no debating whether he's produced. I mean, Byfuglien's leading the team in scoring, but he's not being effective because he's coughing the puck up too much. He's missing his defensive assignments. So this can make him more effective. I think if you have a guy, again, we've talked about this before. This doesn't mean that Buff can't play the point on the power play.
I agree.
I would imagine that he's going to play the point on the power play tonight. If they get a power play.
It might. I think they'll probably put him in front of the net first.
Think so?
Yeah, net presence, and then and try and work with either Trouba or Bogosian up there. But I think it's possible, as I think you might be right. The easier minutes back of the point because you're not getting that physicality.
What about the impact on the rest of the forward group? Obviously, Kane's out of the lineup, so it seemed like they were going to keep Kane, Scheifele, and Frolik together regardless of this move,
yeah.
Which you can't blame them. I mean, they've been playing so well together. Are you concerned about Blake Wheeler's productivity dropping down to a line with, you know, Devin Setoguchi and Olli Jokinen?
Yeah, to an extent, but I mean, Wheeler is a passer, and those guys are both shooters, so that's probably the mindset there is get a guy who can move the puck and create speed with these other guys and see if he can create some opportunities for them, because we know they're not going to create many opportunities for him. But let's see. I mean, Wheeler is a catalyst, but, you know, and he can create, so let's see how that works.
And Richie, you mentioned Setoguchi. Setoguchi somehow hasn't scored a goal in 17 games. I don't know how that's possible for a guy that's getting as much ice time, but he's struggling. So you move him over from the right wing to the left wing. How can that hurt? I mean, do anything right now. And I think it's pretty clear, guys. I know we're going to talk about the defense pairings later, Drew, but I think it's pretty clear that Claude Noel is saying, like, look, I'm going to give Eric Odell more ice time here. I'm going to move Setoguchi around. You know, you're bumping guys. Thorburn's going to go down to the fourth line role, which he's played for the last 4 or 5 years in Winnipeg and Atlanta.
Well, that's the role he's best suited for.
So you're moving guys around, and you're trying to find a right mix. And when you've lost 4 games in a row, you got to change things up. And I think there's a really good chance. Obviously, you know, you don't want to say the Jets are going to hammer the Blue Jackets, but I think they're hungry for a win. And I think this is really going to be a positive move with all these forward line combination moves.
The Jets are hungry for a win, as he's hungry for a pierogi pizza. We're live at Boston Pizza City Place. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Minutes past 12 noon here on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC Game Day, Jets and the Columbus Blue Jackets at 6 p.m. at MTS Center. You can hear it live on TSN 1290.
I want to clarify a point. Ezzy was right. We spoke to Dave Manuk, illegalcurve.com. He was in the Jets room today. Byfuglien will play the power play as a defenseman. Ezzy's right about that, but he won't kill penalties.
Well, Richie, there's, again, you
that's
know,
what Noel said this morning.
I definitely think, though, that using Byfuglien in front of the net isn't a bad use of Byfuglien either. We've talked about it before. There are a lot of big players
I
in the NHL.
I prefer him at the point.
Zdeno Chara plays in
but
front
I
of the net for Boston.
Forward, yeah.
So, you know, you never want to discount anything. You always want to have options, especially on the power play. So you might play on the point. Maybe we'll play in front of the net later on in the year.
It'll be there'll be something certainly worth watching as this experiment unfolds for better or for worse. I like the idea. I think it's about time. You have nothing to lose at this point in time. You know what you have with him as on defense, and maybe this creates something that you'd never thought in your wildest dreams up front.
Let's put it this way: I don't think I could move Dustin Byfuglien if I took a 60-foot running head start if he was in front of the net.
Yeah, but
so putting Byfuglien in front of the net isn't a bad idea.
Except that's because you would be winded after running for 60 feet. That's the
true.
Only problem
yeah,
there.
That's true.
The concern that I have, or one of the concerns that this leads me to defensively, is it definitely affects the Jets' depth on the back end. And I have no problems with, you know, with Trouba and with Mark Stewart playing together, and I don't really have a problem with Bogosian and Enstrom playing together, but Adam Partey and Keaton Ellerbe as your 5-6 pair does make me nervous if that's a long-term pairing together, and we don't see, I mean, it seems that the injury bug on the back end with Postma and Klitson doesn't seem to be absolving itself anytime soon.
Yeah, fair enough, Drew. And yeah, I mean, Postma apparently has made some gains. Klitson hasn't, and that's where things are at in that regard. Redmond was out, you know, working hard in practice this morning, and I think he'll probably draw in on the right side in the next game or two. But right now, yeah, you know, the Ellerbe Partey combination isn't your strongest combination, and there's some decision-making issues, you know, with Ellerbe, and Partey's limited skating-wise, and sometimes can create when he carries the puck. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, those guys are not number eight defensemen on your team. Probably not even seven. They're probably eight. And they're playing 5-6. So what you do in that situation is you ride your horses. And if Byfuglien's going to be playing defense on the power play, that gives you some time for rest for some guys. And I would hope they're going to ride their best defenseman here and see what happens. And when Klitson and Postman do get back, whenever that is, and may not come back obviously at the same time, but then you can apportion that ice time. And those two guys, even defensively at times, that'll be an issue. But let's see. You know, Zach Bogosian's getting money. And he hasn't had a great year. Ed Tate wrote about it this morning in the Free Press, or is it yesterday? I forget. But
it was today.
Yeah, you know, Bogosian, he's getting paid $5 million. Let's see. Let's ride him. And Trouba is a very good young defenseman, and a lot to like about his game. And Enstrom hasn't had a great year, and you know, Stewart's playing has to play over his head in that regard. But overall, let's see. I mean, you know, put up or shut up.
To that point, it's not like the Jets' schedule is especially strenuous over the next month.
Yeah.
And then you got the big break. So
true,
you can ride these guys for the next month.
Yeah. And none of those guys are going to the Olympics. It's exactly
none of those
right.
guys are going to the Olympics. You've got Monday, then you got 2 days off. I mean, you don't have no back-to-backs.
Good point.
For all of January.
Yep.
So, I mean, you play some hard teams, but the schedule itself isn't the most challenging now until the Olympics.
Yeah.
This is what I like about the pairings, and this is what I don't like. And I think any time that you move a guy like Dustin Byfuglien, who's been playing number one pairing or number two pairing, you're going to create a huge hole. That's just the way it works. Yeah, and with Buffy's a big guy, so it is literally a big hole. So I have always said on the show, especially over this season and even dating back to this last season, I like Tobias Enstrom and Zach Bogosian as your number one pair. And I know that they've had problems, and there's been issues with their defensive play. And Zach Bogosian hasn't put up the offensive numbers. He's had injury problems. But I like this because now you've got to ask Bogo to play more minutes, Richie. Bogo's got to start playing more minutes because, as we've said, he's a shutdown guy, especially when his offensive game isn't going. So he's got to play more minutes. He's got to play against top competition. And Stewart and Trouba, you know, Mark Stewart has played the second pairing before. Jacob Trouba continues to be an excellent rookie. And sure, yeah, you have issues with Partey and Ellerbe, the foot speed. And Richie, you know, you mentioned Zach Redmond. And when I saw that Zach Redmond had been recalled, I guess it was late yesterday afternoon, you know, I thought it was about time that you bring him up because they lack speed on that third pairing.
Yeah.
And we should mention, Partey and Ellerbe have played together in the past, and, you know, they've had varying degrees of success. So that's why you throw in...
You can't have a long
time. I ideally like Keaton Ellerbe on the left side, and then I have Zach Redmond on the right side. And then then you've kind of got a mix of size and speed there. So I think that's maybe a pairing that I'd be a little bit more comfortable with. But I think, you know, Partey and Ellerbe, they've played many games in the NHL. They should be fine. And, you know, you've got to start seeing some elevation in the games of Bogo and Enstrom. Because Enstrom, they're not moving Enstrom to forward. I mean, they're not going to start just moving every guy to forward here. Byfuglien's the guy that has that rover ability or that versatility or whatever. Sounds like I'm doing a car commercial here. But, you know.
It is Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day here on TSN 1290.
I'll tell you, I'm watching in the background here at Boston Pizza. They have the old Oilers Flames rivalry game from 1983. Charlie Heidi had a hell of a lot more hair than he does now.
you know, so you think, you know. Do you think Zach Redmond goes in today, or do you think they give him a couple days to get it sort of acclimatized and maybe Monday against Phoenix?
No, I don't think Redmond's in today. Just by, I haven't seen the final roster for today, but they were working him pretty hard at the end of practice.
He got into Winnipeg late too, didn't he?
And they're working him pretty hard at the end of practice. I'm not sure if that's usually when they put him through the paces like that, and I don't go to practice as often as.
No, but Richie, you're right. Usually they stay on later.
They usually don't work him that hard if they're having on game day.
Okay.
So. His agent was very eager. He tweeted, when we tweeted that they recalled him, we got a tweet response from him saying about time. So his agent was obviously champing at the bit to get Zach Redmond back up in Winnipeg.
Zach Redmond, you know, out of Ferris State University. Richie knows where that is because Richie went to law school in the U.S.
I don't know how that's relevant to anything.
Well, you know the U.S. colleges. But, you know, Zach Redmond's at that age and that development level right now, Richie, that you got to play him more. You got to see. They haven't called up very many defensemen this year, guys. And, yeah, sure, Paul Postma and Grant Clitsam have had some injury problems here. And they're not an option. As Richie mentioned, Clitsam might be out for a significant portion of time, and Paul Postma had the blood clot issue. He might come back maybe a little bit earlier. But, you know, you got to get Redmond in there. Because at times the Jets have lacked that foot speed on that final pair. I don't think that's an issue when you've got Trouba, Bogo, and Enstrom, Richie. Those guys can skate. But yeah, let's see Redmond. Give him some opportunity. This is the time to now see how he's progressed over. Because he's gotten to this point, Richie, is really spot duty.
He isn't the second coming of Bobby Orr here, is he?
I didn't say that.
But, you know, I think that he adds a element of speed, as you mentioned, and the right side guy that they need. But I mean, I think that people need to curb expectations for Zach Redmond. That's my opinion.
What about Mark Stewart playing an increased role? Is it just a matter of, in an ideal world, he's not playing that role, but you know, you have to pick your poison. And in that case, Mark Stewart playing more minutes was the trade-off to moving Byfuglien outside of the defensive responsibilities?
Well, Richie, you've got Mark Stewart and Trouba together. They've played together over the last little while here, so I think that's why that's your second pairing as opposed to maybe having Party with Trouba or LRB with Trouba. You've got a more veteran guy. Stewart has a reputation for being a little bit more steady defensively. That's why I think that pairing was stuck together.
I mean, they have no other option, Drew. What are they going to do? Put LRB or Party, and as he said, in the top four. Dear God, I mean, that's people still pay for these tickets, right? I mean, let's be honest here. Stewart is a guy who's, you know, more well-suited to that third pairing, and his game, you know, what he's going to do. He's going to play a rough-and-tough style. He's going to block shots. He's going to stick up for teammates. He's going to be physical. He's going to be physical at the opposing blue line. He's going to be physical at his own blue line. He's a little bit aggressive. He's limited offensively and not the best skater in the world, and that's what he is. That's Mark Stewart, but they don't have a better option than him. And that's by default. And he plays the left side, so be it. You know, he brings you a good, honest effort every game, and you know you're going to get that. So the coaches like the fact that they know what to expect from him.
That's what I was going to say with Claude Noel. The headaches that the defense have given him for the entire year, to be able to just, you know, mark a guy's name on the paper, and you know what you're going to get from him, effort-wise and skill level-wise and consistency-wise. You know, it's somewhat reassuring in that case. You know, it'll be interesting. It all gets underway at 6 p.m. as the Jets and the Blue Jackets puck drop here at MTSN. You can listen to the game live on TSN 1290. When we come back, we're going to spend the next 30 or so minutes talking about Michael Frolik and the impact that he's had on this team and what he would be worth as a free agent this coming summer. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
In the afternoon here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website is IllegalCurve.com. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center, it's an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Richie, people have not been afraid of laying some criticism at the feet of Winnipeg Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff off this year. A couple of the moves, or really the one, you know, the move for Devin Setoguchi certainly has not been a successful one. It's been, you know, anything but, really, if you look at what the Jets gave up with a second-round pick and what the output has been as a result. But unquestionably, the move for Michael Frolik, acquiring Michael Frolik at the entry draft, at the draft, has been one that has been successful. He's probably given the Jets a consistent effort night in, night out. He's playing a second line right wing role. He's become very close and very much of an asset for Mark Scheifele on the ice. But he's also a restricted free agent this coming off season. So we thought that we would do, or Richie, you would do, what you've done so many times before, and really do a contract analysis of Michael Frolik and what he's worth both to the Winnipeg Jets and what he could potentially be worth as a restricted free agent this summer.
Well, you know what, Drew? This was kind of prompted by the fact that there's been talk about Frolik and wanting to lock him up. And, I mean, the team doesn't need to lock him up now. The team has until the summer to lock him up. I'll go over the free agent status quickly. Michael Frolik is a pending restricted free agent, meaning the team has to tender him a qualifying offer to retain his rights. And what will happen is if they tender him a qualifying offer, he'll likely reject the offer. But by tendering him the offer, the Jets will retain his rights, as I just mentioned.
Right. Now, it's a foregone conclusion that they will tender that qualifying offer.
Yeah almost.
Richie,
sure.
Is that qualifying offer automatically the same salary that he makes now, or is it
I think it's a 10% kicker based on scale. I'd have to look at it, but it's going to happen regardless. They're going to tender him, and he's going to reject it as far as I would. I can tell. And then at that point in time, the Jets they retain his rights and they can negotiate with him, or they can go to arbitration. Both team and player have the right to go to arbitration. An arbitration award can be 1 or 2 years, but because of the fact that Frolik is only under team control for a maximum of one more season, because he's played 7 years in the National Hockey League as of next year, the arbitration award can only be 1 year regardless.
Meaning, if he signs a one-year contract, he would be an unrestricted free agent afterwards. So an arbitrator can't take away his unrestricted status by signing a two-year contract.
That's right. So then you get into the negotiation. Well, do the Jets want him on a one-year deal? Likely not, because then he can just bolt down for the highest offer and they might not get compensation for him. Or if they get compensation for him, it would probably be later on and they get less than they would if a team knew they were going to get him for a year or longer. Michael Frolik is a guy who's drafted by Florida, top 10 pick, and was, you know, expected to be an offensive producer, had a good rookie season, and hasn't become the offensive player that many expected. Now, he's still offensively capable, as he, and he's proven that at times in his career, both in Chicago, Florida, and Winnipeg, but I think Florida early in his career when he was given that opportunity. Recently, Andrew Cogliano in Edmonton signed a contract extension for 4 years and $12 million.
So, in Anaheim.
Yeah, sorry, Anaheim, Edmonton. Yeah. $3 million per year. Now, think about the guy. Just, before we get into the details of the contract, aside from the fact that it's $3 million a year, think about these guys in terms of their similarities. First-round picks, guys who can skate, expected to be offensive players, never had really good rookie seasons, but never really followed up on that, never became the players that some had anticipated that they would become. Never being the guys, you know, maybe that top six lock-in guys that the teams had hoped for when they drafted them.
Playing with different teams that drafted them
as well.
That's
right, and different teams and different roles at this point. Michael Frolik in Chicago is a checker. Here he's kind of insulated Scheifele and helped in terms of scoring, but Michael Frolik is ideally, you know, your third line right winger. And, you know, he's got about a point every other game this year, and he's done an honest, good job. But, you know, he's not going to be, he's not really your scorer. He can create some offense, but he's not going to be a sniper. So, you look at the contract that Cogliano signed, and you wonder, you know, how similar are these two guys, aside from the fact that they kind of fit that bill? Well, look, it's kind of scary how similar it is.
Well, let me interrupt you for a second. Sure. Normally, when you do this kind of analysis, because you've done this for pretty much every pending Jets UFA or RFA.
Right.
Normally, you look at almost a number of guys, 4 or 5 guys, because, you know, player A is similar to player B in this aspect, but he's similar to player C in this aspect. With this comparison, with Cogliano, I mean, and, you know, I'll send out a link right now on our Twitter feed. The article is on illegalcurve.com. The similarities here are almost uncanny. So why don't you, you know, go through those similarities, and, you know, Ezzy, you can jump in there and we'll talk about them all.
The only difference between these two guys is their age. Basically, Coghlan was 26, Frolik's 25. Coghlan was drafted in 05, and Frolik a year later in 06. Both were drafted in the first round. Both play the wing. Their career points per game. Frolik, 0.44. Cogliano, 0.439. It's the same. They have the same points per game production. Career high in goals. Frolik, 21. Cogliano, 18. Career high in assists. Frolik, 24. Cogliano, 27. Career high points. Both 45. Points this season. Now that this was written last week. So about 25, 26 points each. Even strength ice time per game this year. This is as of the writing of this article. For Frolik, as he was playing 13.46 a game, Coghlano 13.44. I mean, how much more similar can you get here? Power play ice time, that's the one thing. For Frolik's getting just under a minute of ice time. Cogliano's getting just over 10 seconds. On the PK, Cogliano's playing a minute 30. For Frolik's playing about a minute. And their cap hit this year. Cogliano 2.39. For Frolik 2.33. I mean, can you get more similar in terms of story?
No. I mean, Richie, these two players are literally, if you want to go by the numbers, not literally the same player in the sense that Frolik, I guess you would agree, is more maybe of a defensive-minded player and was expected to
Cogliano
be more...
Cogliano with Winnick and Coyle, who's taken on that role.
Cogliano plays on the penalty kill, but I guess you could say maybe over the last little while.
Sure.
But Cogliano, you're right, Richie. When he was with the Oilers, he was expected to be even almost a first-line or a second-line offensive player. And these guys, you're talking about third-liners. I want to mention, though, when we're talking about Cogliano and Frolik, I think you're talking about very good third-liners.
I agree.
And you're talking about guys that would be good third-liners on any team. Cogliano on the Ducks, a team that has not lost at home yet.
Crazy.
And Frolik, who won the Stanley Cup last year, on the third line. So you can't say that, Frolik, he's not... If Frolik is asked to play second line right wing, which he has been this year, he's doing a good job.
These are upper echelon third liners in the NHL.
Frolik is on pace to kind of be around his career numbers. He's got 9 goals and 25 points, so he's probably 24 points. He's probably going to end up somewhere between 35, 45 points. Let's call it 40 points. So he'll be around one of his best career offensive years. And yes, Richie, that's because he's been playing second line as opposed to third line.
And he can play second line, but you're better on a really good team that's serious about making a run here, your third line.
But Richie, as you mentioned, as far as the kind of the task that Kevin Cheveldayoff has in front of him, and guys, he doesn't have all of these guys to sign this year. There's not Blake Wheeler, Brian Little, Zach Bogosian out there.
That's
these
big
core pieces that he's got to sign. Frolik is a key piece.
Really.
And if you look at Cogliano, as you mentioned, Richie, in this article, 4 years, $12 million. That's a good benchmark for maybe what Chevy is going to sign Frolik to. Or would aspire to sign
well,
him
to. Well, let's talk about that then. Cogliano did sign that four-year, $12 million contract extension to stay in Anaheim. For at least the next 4 years, barring a trade or something along those lines. What can Michael Frolik? I mean, what can Michael Frolik? His agent is Alan Walsh. I know. What can Michael Frolik and Alan Walsh negotiate with the Winnipeg Jets? If they came and said we want a 4-year, $12 million deal, do the Jets, say thank you very much and we'll take that deal?
Well, Cogliano is a pending UFA this offseason, and he signed this contract, so Frolik has an extra year of team control. The Jets have an extra year of team control here, so conceivably you get a discounted rate for that year.
Team control being a euphemism for leverage, really.
Right. Now the truth is, I read right at the end of the article, based on the fact, people say, put it this way, based on the fact that Frolik could go to arbitration for 1 year and then leave town, you probably want to say here, we realize that he was a pending UFA and you have an RFA year, we'll give you four years, $12 million anyways. I think that's fair. Now, there's some people that people have been talking about that think he's worth, $4 million or $4.5 million. Let's not get crazy here, guys. The good teams in this league don't pay the guys who are in their top talent within a budget here a lot of money. Remember, Nathan Horton last year, let's keep this in mind.
Who will see tonight as a Columbus Blue Jacket?
Yeah, Nathan Horton this offseason has 5.3 contract a cap hit per year for, I think it was a 7-year deal, the maximum. 7-year deal, 5.3 cap hit per year. Guy who's big, power forward, performed in the Stanley Cup, been great, scores 30 goals. You don't want to get that close to, you know, this, you're talking two different levels of player there.
Well, you can consider it sort of like a slotting system. I mean, if the Jets, you know, if they sign Michael Frolik and they say, you know, we're going to sign Frolik, but in an ideal world, we envision him as our third line right winger. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to be a very good team like the Blackhawks use them and like the Ducks are using Cogliano. We want him to be our third line right winger. You know, you can't pay him more than, you know, than what, you know, the guys like, you know, Andrew Ladd and Brian Little are making. I would suggest,
yeah,
I mean,
Ladd's making
4-4. I mean, you know, if $4 million, if there's a Winnipeg tax on, you know, on, to sign a player.
I don't believe in, by the way.
Then, I mean, that's, I mean, you can't be going anywhere above that number. Anything more than that, and you're asking for long-term difficulties and something that potentially could be an albatross on your salary cap.
You know, going back to Richie, just for a second, because I know we want to continue with kind of the, you know, the salary cap implications of what he could sign for. But if you look at Setoguchi, and that was a mistake, I look at the trade for Michael Frolik. We were in New York, New Jersey for the draft. I look at that trade, and I say you do that 10 times over again. You give up a third-round pick and a fifth-round pick to get a guy who has produced on your second line, can kill penalties, he's good. He's a good leader. I think that trade makes up for the Setoguchi trade in my mind.
Well, that's why I started the segment by talking about that, you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff deserves praise
for
this move.
You got to give him credit when credit is due, right?
And in this instance, credit is due. Let's hold off there. We'll go to break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about Michael Frolik on the other side. We'll talk about the Jets forward groups. We'll get you set up a little bit more for the Jets and the Blue Jackets tonight at MTS Center. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, this is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by the Certified General Accountants of Manitoba. The CGA Association of Manitoba is the largest, fastest growing, and most diverse accounting body in the province. Did you know that CGAs are among the top 5% of income earners in Canada with an average yearly salary of $74,000 for new graduates? For more information, contact the CGA Association at cga-manitoba.org. Certified General Accountants, we see more than numbers. Speaking of numbers, Richie, you wanted to talk about Andrew Ladd's cap comparables in the NHL.
Well, and not because we're talking about Andrew Ladd as much as we're talking about people saying, oh, you know, Frolik, I'd pay him up to four. I was going to tell you some guys are making $4 to $4.5 million.
You're saying people think that, you know, everybody's making $4 to $4.5 million a little bit?
I mean, let's talk about guys making 4.5. Jason Palmerville, this is up CapGeek. Vinny LeCavalier, David Backes, Teddy Purcell, David Legwon, Eric Cole, Brad Marchand, Martin. I mean, so and you 4.4 is Ladd, 4.3 is Milan Mihailuk, who's going to be a free agent. Patrick Reddy is at 4.5. I realize there's different situations with RFAs, UFA status. Louis Erickson 4.2. So the idea is Callahan 4.2. Well, you know, there's free agent statuses for some of these guys. But the point is, like, let's not get crazy here with what you got.
Another guy I was mentioning to you, Richie, too.
More reasonable that you're going to mention.
Well, because I did a little research. I know you guys don't think I ever do research.
No.
But, you know, a guy that I was looking at, not similar in that Chevy can use this, but Franz Nielsen, a guy that Richie has liked for many years, putting up very good numbers for the Islanders, almost at a point a game this year. He's got 35 points in 46 games, not quite a point a game, but he's having a very good year on a pretty bad Islanders team right now. He was signed to a four-year deal, which saw him make $2 million last year, $2.5 this year, $3 million next year, $3.5 2 years from now. So if a guy like Franz Nielsen, better offensively, better defensively, plays a bigger role in the Islanders as a second-line center, really is, as you've mentioned, Richie, he's almost a guy that you could put not only in the Selke conversation, you could put him in the Hart Trophy consideration. So you're right, Richie. You can't. You got to be reasonable here. Michael Frolik is a very good player. He can play on your second line, ideally probably on your third line, but you don't want to just throw, you know, the entire kitchen sink
out. Let's not get crazy with paying guys all the time. You know, just because a guy wants, you know, wants his money doesn't mean you got to pay him. And if it really means, if you know,
unless the guy's really big and he's going to break your thumbs,
or he's out tweeting at you like Alan Walsh. But the truth is, you know, I realize the cap's going up, but the cap and the cap going up is important. But I think what you want to do is ideally pay your core guys. And I don't think he's a core guy. He's certainly a complement to your core guys, but I don't think he's a core guy. Now, you can take issue with the core guys, but that's a different conversation for another day.
They have paid their core guys, and so then the question that I come back down to is, you know, would you think that Michael Frolik would accept, you know, the 4 years, $12 million offer?
Alan Walsh might drive a hard bargain, but I think that's certainly a reasonable middle ground for the two of them. I mean, to think about a guy who, when sent to Chicago, weren't sure what he was going to become, logged a lot of time on the fourth line to be offered a 4 year deal with $12 million sounds pretty appealing to me.
Right, and we know, Richie, that Frolik and Pavlik are lifelong friends. That does factor in. I think he likes Winnipeg, and I haven't spoken to him personally, but the opportunity he's been given, he has Pavlik on the team, a friend of his. We've all read about that. Dave Manuk of IllegalCurve.com wrote an article about that, how they have that relationship at Kladno, I believe it was, right?
Yeah, Kladno, Czech Republic.
So, I mean, and Frolik, you know, I talking about the Richie's right. You got to be realistic here with the expectations of Frolik. But I mean, I really like Frolik's game, and I like Frolik's game for the Chicago Blackhawks. He was an important piece. He had 10 points in about 23-ish games, I think it was. But he played a key role. Like, he wasn't just a passenger on that Hawks team. So I mean, I think Richie mentioned he's not a core piece, so you're not going to sign him to 6 years. But if you sign him for 4 years, that's a complimentary player. And I think he plays well with a bunch of different players. So I think that if he's offered 4 years, you know, I think he'll strongly consider it.
Let me ask you this question from Kevin Cheveldayoff's perspective. If you look at the Jets roster, you know, he's the kind of guy that probably most teams in the NHL would pick a guy like him off their roster if he was available. Somebody called the Jets fall out of it, you know, by the trade deadline, as, you know, they sort of right now are, unless they have a big comeback. Somebody picks up the phone and offers Kevin Cheveldayoff a late first-round pick for him. Do you make that trade?
Yeah. Yeah, I make that trade.
I think you got to have a player coming with that pick. I don't think I think his value is so high that you don't just trade him for a first-round pick. You possibly get another player that you think you could put in the lineup next year. So I think for me, it's no. You have to have another player coming back with that first-round pick.
Okay. Well, that was
You asked the question.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's why I asked the question, because I think it's a tough decision. I mean, I think, and this is probably goes across the hockey world, I think people in hometowns tend to overvalue certain players. So the question is,
a lot of teams would like Michael Frolik on their
team. Right, I think
his trade value higher.
Which I think makes his trade value would be an interesting question to hear bandied about among NHL general manager circles. You know, what value does he actually have? You know,
does Scott Burnside have another piece coming out?
I'm not sure. I don't know that he's necessarily in the Jets' dressing room at all. To ask those questions. But I think that Michael Frolik it's certainly been a good acquisition for the Jets, and his contributions, you know, on the score sheet have been pretty impressive, but I think his contributions to not only Mark Scheifele, but I think he's done a fair bit for Evander Kane also. Look how many years it's been now that the Jets have been struggling to find somebody who can play on the right side with Evander Kane, and it seems so far that Michael Frolik has been able to fill that role to some extent since that line has been put together.
I think it all goes together, right? Because I think that Frolik insulating Scheifele to an extent allows Scheifele to feel more confident and then attack and have more confidence to play with Kane, who then plays better because Scheifele's playing more confident and Scheifele has more room because Kane's, you know, hockey's a game of many intertwined facets,
sure.
So it's difficult to attribute one to one, you know, one specific thing to a player. But that line has played well together, and obviously Kane not playing tonight is going to be an issue for the team. But
why is that line played well together? What do you see about that line that is, you know, said, okay, these are three guys who are gelling well?
I've seen Kane kind of take Scheifele under his wing. That's my impression from afar, is that Kane is kind of, you know, is coaching Scheifele. But you watch their dynamic on the ice, and you just see what Kane says after games. You know, I want you to go after Crosby, stuff like that. I feel like I feel like Kane maybe didn't know if Scheifele could keep up. And I feel like now with Scheifele starting to play well there on the road trip with Hallischuk and Frolik, and I think the biggest thing in this game is development of his play in open ice. And then he started playing with more confidence. And I think when Kane saw that, Kane said, maybe this guy can help me. And then by helping him, he can also help. It's a mutual, you know, mutual benefit that they have. And I think what's happened with that is Scheifele has played with more confidence. I think Kane is starting to disperse the puck a little, at least intending to disperse the puck. I mean, he's never going to be Adam Oates, but there's...
By which you mean a great passer.
Yeah, but at least, you know, they're looking around, and they're able to create space, and Frolik gets the puck to where it needs to go and protects zone if need be, and Scheifele's working at his game, and yeah, I think the line has worked out, and it's been nice for, I think, all players, probably.
Yeah, Richie, and Kane's obviously not playing tonight with the hand injury, but I don't think it's any coincidence that Scheifele's best hockey has been with Kane and since he came back from that injury. And you're right. Kane, it's hard to believe, he's been in the league for so many years now. He's only 22 years old, still hasn't turned 23. High first-round pick. Scheifele was a high first-round pick. Mm-hmm. Comes into the NHL at a young age. Obviously, it's not until he's 20 that he has a regular role in the NHL. But absolutely, Kane has taken him under his wing. It hasn't been talked about as much, but really, you know, he's looking up to Evander Kane. And we know that Scheifele can skate with Kane. He beat him in the skills competition.
Well, I mean, he's not as good of a skater as Kane, but
he's not as good of a skater, but he's fast.
He's improved his skating.
I mean, that's not debatable. He won the fastest skater competition.
Right. But the knock on him coming out of when he was drafted was the skating, and he's improved dramatically.
He's improved it immensely, but don't read too much into the fastest skater.
But you still have to say he's a fast skater, though.
He's improved as a skater. Yeah, he's become a good skater. I would agree with that. Is he a great skater? I wouldn't say he's a great skater.
But he's still won fastest skater.
But sort of Donald Brashear every year. I mean, it's different skating in a circle around the ice than it is playing in a hockey game. It's a different speed element. There's different elements of speed, right? There's different ways to be fast.
Yep.
Quickness, fast, your turns and all that stuff. How are you with the puck? How are you without the puck? All that stuff. So, I mean, it certainly demonstrated that he's improved his skating. I will 100% agree to that. I don't think it means that he's a better skater than Evander Kane, though.
Well, you know...
And not that you said that, but...
Evander Kane gets a lot of grief in this city, you know, deserved or not deserved, is up for argument. But I think most people would say that his on-ice performance, he usually does give, you know... Very few people could argue with his on-ice performance and the effort he demonstrates on a night-in, night-out basis.
There's no question effort. I think sometimes it's just decision-making, but the effort's always been there.
Right, so there's worse things for the Jets, for Mark Scheifele to emulate from the Winnipeg Jets perspective than to emulate Evander Kane and his on-ice performance and his on-ice effort on a night-in, night-out basis.
I think it's an attitude thing, too. Kane's cocky.
A bit of an, you know, sort of a...
But I think the thing that probably rubs off a bit and maybe that gives that confidence becomes... Whether it's a, you know, sometimes people confuse confidence with cockiness, but I think it's a little bit of both.
I think you have to be cocky to be really successful in the NHL.
You have to be confident, and I think that Scheifele is, and maybe he's taking on a little bit of that attitude. We could disagree. I mean, that's certainly a subjective argument, but...
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch. We'll talk about the Winnipeg Jets' opponent tonight, that being the Columbus Blue Jackets. That game gets underway 6 p.m. here on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at Boston Pizza City Place on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from the Columbus Dispatch, our good friend Aaron Portsline. Aaron, before we get to talking about the Blue Jackets, the opponent for the Winnipeg Jets tonight, I need to know, did you bring me any Jenny's Splendid Ice Cream from Columbus?
You know what? If I were kind enough to do that, there's no way I would have survived the plane.
That's fair enough. I can accept that answer. It is some good ice cream. No argument there.
That would have crushed it, yeah. No
Aaron, welcome back to the program. Obviously, the first time the Blue Jackets have been in Winnipeg for a regular season game. You have the team played here, the first exhibition game since the team returned from Atlanta. Aaron, before we get to talking about the Blue Jackets and their on-ice play and the on-ice performance, you know, I wanted to go back to the Winter Classic announcement where Jack Johnson wasn't selected for the U.S. Olympic team at the Sochi Olympics. You know, why do you think he wasn't selected, and how surprised were you that he was omitted from that team?
Well, I mean, I don't think anybody was blown away that he wasn't selected, just because I think people assumed he was maybe a bubble guy. I mean, he's played so much for the USA through the years, I think you sort of give him a benefit of the doubt if it's close. I wouldn't say I was shocked, I don't think his hurt was that he wasn't on the team, although that's obviously part of it. It's just the way that announcement came to pass was so brutal. I mean, just an absolute case study on how not to do things. That made it hard for him to swallow. Bobby Ryan's in the same boat, or even maybe a worse situation. And Keith Yandel, and all those guys, just terrible job, in my opinion, the way that Team USA handled that whole situation. So he was disappointed, obviously, not on the team, but I think he was hurt, is the best way to say it, by the way that they exposed so many of their guys and just really let it go down the wrong way.
Aaron, Marian Gabrick is one of the first acquisitions by Jarmo Kekäläinen, obviously part of a bigger deal, but, you know, he just hasn't seemed to put it together, especially this year with his injuries, now once again injured with a collarbone injury. What is the time frame for his return, and, you know, what do you think is the possibility of him being dealt prior to the deadline?
Well, it was a tricky situation before. Now it's really up in the air and on two fronts. I mean, he obviously wants to play in the Olympics for Slovakia. Well, you know, he needs to be cleared by the Blue Jackets medical staff before he can do that. I don't know where it's going to be if he doesn't play for the Blue Jackets before the Olympic break that they cleared him. I mean, if he's medically cleared, he's medically cleared, but that could be a touchy situation. Then when he comes back from the Olympics, there's four or five games between the Olympics being over and the season picking up again. So, not, you know, their evaluation, I guess is what I'm saying, is pretty much done at this point. I don't see him being here beyond this season, and I guess by saying that, then, yeah, I won't be surprised at all if they trade him at the trade deadline. Not a bad guy. Guys in the room like him. It just hasn't worked here, and I get the sense that it's going to be over and seem like it's over before he even got started.
Aaron, Nathan Horton's finally back in the lineup. He's played in four games. Got that game-winning goal in his first game back. How has he looked, in your opinion, in the four games since he's been back?
Yeah, I think he looks as you would expect a player who's been out for a long time to look. He had a real push, beginning a real surge, and then I think his body sort of, you know, rejecting this whole idea of putting yourself through this night after night. It's going to take him some time. He has said his hands aren't quite there. His legs and his lungs are getting there, but the speed of the game, you know, when you're on the ice, up to pace, I think people forget how fast this game moves, and him not being out there for a while, it's really taking him some time. Now, he's been competitive, he's fine, he's had some moments, but he's not fully Nathan Horton, and he would admit that himself.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch, talking about the Blue Jackets, the opponent of your Winnipeg Jets tonight. Aaron, you talk about the Blue Jackets, and you talk about the Vezina Award winner from last season, Sergei Bobrovsky. He returned from injury this week. He posted two wins. He got a shutout last night against the Carolina Hurricanes. Do you expect Bobrovsky to be the number one goaltender for Russia at the 2014 Olympics? And how much has that been sort of playing in the back of his mind throughout the season, which really hasn't been as good as last year's Vezina Award-winning season?
Yeah, well, he's done a really good job of saying the right things and of being insistent that he's focusing on the Blue Jackets and the NHL, and he'll worry about Sochi when it gets here. In the back of his mind, this is a huge, huge, huge deal. I mean, he corrected me the other day. I said, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And he said, no, this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for one of us in our generation, like to be the goaltender of the country that hosts the games. That is beyond huge. So this is very, very meaningful to him. This is a guy who's carried a chip on his shoulder a little bit, put there by Bryzgalov. Although they're friends, they've had a very competitive professional relationship. I think there's a huge sense of relief that Bryzgalov's not part of the mix. at this point, the three goalies have been picked, and Grishkov is not among them. I don't know who the starter is. My sense is that it's going to be Bobrovsky. I've got word into Trejak, but he's not getting right back to me with that answer, so we'll have to wait.
You know, Aaron, Todd Richards is a guy who, you know, when you come in as a general manager and you have a coach in place, people always wonder, is that his guy? Is that Kekalainen's guy? What's been your impression of Richards' job through this season, and you know, kind of along the lines of the Gabra question, and what do you see for him in terms of in the future?
Well, he deserves a ton of credit, I think, and there's a few people who have done yeoman's work to turn this lost vessel around, if you will. It was in a just awful shape when Todd Richards took over for Scott O'Neill a little more than 2 years ago. He was a steadying influence the first year. Jack Johnson came in, said all the right things, played the right way. He had a big part in this. There's been a few other players, but I think Richards deserves a lot of credit for getting them to this point, for steadying their play, for defining an identity and a direction for this club. This is how this team has to play. And you know what? This team, really, talent-wise, had no business going 19-5-5 at the end of last. A lot of credit for that. You know, I don't know if he's the long-term answer. I don't know if he's the guy that's going to lead them to playoff berths and playoff series wins and what have you. But I can't say enough about the guy and the way that he's directed this team to respectability when they could not have been further from that when he took over.
Aaron, a lot of people here in Manitoba, especially Brandon, where he's from, have heard of this guy, and they know how prolific of a junior scorer he was, Matt Calvert. But you wrote about him in the Columbus Dispatch. He's really become a key member of the Columbus Blue Jackets over the last few years. What's his greatest attribute, in your opinion?
Well, you know what he is? He is, and there's a couple guys that are close to this. I think he's the best example of this. He is exactly what they want to be as a hockey team. There's a lot of passion in this game. There's a lot of speed. There's tenacity. This kid has a heart that rages and is desperate to win hockey games. You can't not see it when you watch him play. The way he forechecks, the way he pursues the puck, he's more skilled than people would probably realize if you don't watch him day in, day out. If he can stay healthy, and he's had a hard time with that this year, this is a kid who's really going to surprise some people and really become an impactful type player. They use him in all ways. He's still young. He's still getting bigger. But he has really blossomed, not just into a good player, but in almost to the very definition of what they want a Blue Jacket to be.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Aaron Portsline. He covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, Ryan Johansson is an RFA after this season. Do you expect that the Blue Jackets will look to lock him up to a long-term contract, or do you expect it might be a sort of a shorter-term bridge-type contract?
I would suspect, given Kekalainen's history, given tendencies around the league and given some of the issues for this season with Johansson, that it would be a three-year contract that will lead him 1 year with RFA when he comes out on the other end. He's really helped his cause, though. He's going to do pretty well in this next deal after the way that he's played this year. Really has blossomed. Red line in is where you notice it. He's never... His first couple of years, he was not a very impactful player offensively. This year, it's been totally different. He's still a very good defensive centerman, but he wants the puck. He's possessing the puck. He's holding the puck a half second longer, extending plays with it. There are times he looks like a little bit of Joe Thornton and a little bit of Ryan Getzlaf. He doesn't quite have the mean streak of Getzlaf, not quite the playmaking of Thornton. But there's a lot to like about this kid. He's just starting to realize how strong he is. He's just starting to trust himself physically that he can win battles against established NHL players. And he's taking over games, which is a big deal for this franchise.
And we hear a lot about young players, Aaron. Ryan Murray's a guy that we used to hear a lot more about, but don't hear a ton about now. And he's playing alongside James Wisniewski in Columbus. How has he progressed to people who haven't really seen him play?
Yeah, well, here's what I like to say about Murray. If you go into a game without going out of your way to pay attention to Ryan Murray, mm-hmm. you may not notice him, which can be a compliment for a young player, usually is. If you go into a game and watch him, specifically him, yeah, you'll be very, very impressed by the quick, smart decisions that he makes. He's really, really patient. He makes very little to just alleviate pressure on a forecheck that some veteran players never get a grasp on him. This kid just has this innate sense, like the best ones do, put the puck where to go with the puck. So smooth. He'll not an offensive stud, not Shea Weber, but a real well-rounded, all-areas kind of player.
Aaron, another rookie that I want to ask you about, a guy that's probably a little bit more noticeable, is Boone Jenner. He's in his rookie year, and he's had some varying degrees of success. Have you thought of Boone Jenner in his rookie year, and you know, what do you expect out of him tonight against the Jets?
Yeah, well, they've got him playing on the wing. Yeah. They're not quite there yet with him being a centerman in the NHL. I think he's going to be there eventually, probably a second or third line centerman. But he's playing on the wing right now. He's with Anisimov and Horton. Pretty physical line. He's a pretty physical player. He can piss some people off with the way he wins. He's a tenth of a second late with the check after the puck is gone. He doesn't mind that stuff. He's a very strong kid. He's not playing like he did in junior, where he's blowing people up and he's scoring goals left and right. He's a much more contained player now. But I think they've been impressed. He's come in and out offensively. Some games he looks like he's ready to be a force, and some games you don't really notice him with the puck. But all in all, pretty good rookie year by a kid that they've got a lot of hope for.
Aaron Portsline covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and we'll see you in a few hours for the Jets and the Blue Jackets.
It was my pleasure. Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Aaron. Thanks very much. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Yeah, I know. 20 minutes past 1 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Aaron Portsline for having just joined us. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Jets and the Blue Jackets, 6 p.m. tonight at MTS Center. You can hear the game live on TSN 1290. It's Birchwood Chevrolet Buick GMC game day on this fine station. We've talked about the game for the last, you know, or the Jets and the game for the last hour, give or take. What do you guys think is your keys to the game for the Jets playing the Blue Jackets tonight? And of course, right off the top, it's worth noting, the Blue Jackets didn't get here till late last night. They played a back-to-back game. They played at home last night. They had to travel up here. So, I mean, it is a bit of a weakened opponent, but the Jets haven't been able to take advantage of that as of late.
Yeah, Richie, they had a pretty convincing 3-0 win over the Carolina Hurricanes. Bobrovsky, we didn't ask Aaron Portsline, Bobrovsky got the shutout last night. And he tweeted out that he expects Curtis McElhinney to play, even though, as you mentioned, Richie, you were at the game day skate at the MTS Center, and Columbus didn't practice, and so we don't know, but we're expecting McElhinney to be in net, and he obviously had to step in for Bobrovsky when he went down with that injury. He missed, I think it was about 4 weeks. But, you know, the Columbus Blue Jackets have had a very inconsistent season. If you look at their record, it's actually very similar to the Winnipeg Jets. They haven't had any extended winning streaks, really, and they had a 500 start, and they've really just mm-hmm. stayed there. But the Columbus Blue Jackets, to me, I mentioned that in the first couple segments, to me the strength of this team is in goal and on defense. They've got some pretty underrated defensemen there. Ryan Murray, as Richie asked Aaron Portsline about, he's had a pretty quiet, good year. Maybe hasn't put up the offensive numbers that you'd expect out of a guy that was drafted second overall, Richie. But this is a team that they have some guys that can hurt you. You know, Ryan Johansson.
Scarlett Johansson?
You know, his, she's a little bit better looking. But Ryan Johansson, he's a guy that, you know, he's now playing first-line center, and he's actually put up his best offensive numbers. you know, he's an RFA. They're going to have to make a decision about that. As Aaron mentioned, he thinks that he'll probably sign a three-year deal. But, you know, they can score some goals. They're a middle-of-the-pack team that can score some goals. They have guys that can hurt you, but they're not exactly a physically imposing team or a dominant team. They've got some decent pieces there, but I think this is a team that the Jets can take advantage of coming off of a back-to-back.
Columbus is an interesting team, as I agree with a lot of what you say. You know, they're a team, to me, constructed of a lot of tweeners. You know, what's RJ Umberger? Is he your top six guy? Is he that scorer, or is he more the checking role? What's Nick Foligno? Is he your top six guy? Is he your scorer? You know, is he more of a checking role? And we know what Nathan Horton is. You know, he's a top six guy. But the team has a lot of those guys where you're not sure. Ryan Johansson's a load to get off the puck. He's big. He has good vision when he's engaged, when he's working hard. He's very difficult to stop. His motivation has been questioned before. Talent has never been a question for Ryan Johansson, and he certainly had a solid season. When you look at him line by line, I think a lot of how they play is dictated by Brandon Dubinsky. We talk about leadership, and Brandon Dubinsky slotting in beside Matt Calvert, who we asked Aaron Portsline about, and Cam Atkinson, a kind of an energy guy, likes to create offense. Again, you know, this team 1 through 12, I mean, their fourth line isn't very good. And, you know, that's not dissimilar to how the Winnipeg Jets are constructed. So, you mentioned similar records. Similar in a lot of respects. And I think when you look at that, you look at defense.
Yeah.
And defense can create offense. James Wisniewski can create offense, but he's a little bit of a liability defensively. I mean, that's a concern, right? Jack Johnson. No question that this guy is a great skater, kind of like Zach Bogosian, but at times makes, you know, a little bit too aggressive and get caught up ice. I think one of the keys for the Winnipeg Jets tonight will be taking advantage of the aggressive, sometimes over-aggressive Columbus Blue Jackets in terms of, you know, pinching in on the offensive zone. And what I mean by that is if the Blue Jackets pinch in offensively from their defense, the Jets can create some odd man opportunities. I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets get a couple odd man opportunities off of aggressiveness from Columbus in the offensive zone, specifically, on their defense. So you have a puck moving defense there again. You're very much seeing a Winnipeg Jets team on the other side, save and except for Sergei Bobrovsky, who's a great goaltender at least last year and played very well last night, but probably won't play tonight, so you won't see him.
The numbers were, I mean, much like Michael Frolik and Andrew Cogliano, the numbers between the Jets and the Blue Jackets, if you looked at their raw
very
numbers,
similar.
Very similar. So these are, go keep expanding on your point there. Sorry for
Well, you know, I think one thing is, you know, if you want to look at matchups, and, you know, breaking it down in this segment, if you want to look at matchups, I would assume you will see, well, this is actually interesting. What will Claude Noel do? Will he put Trouba's pairing up against Anisimov? Not that it happened every shift, although he has last change. Or will he put Bogosian's pairing up against? Because this team really has two, you know, Aaron Portsline talks about the Anisimov-Horton general line. That's a big line, guys. Those are 6'2", 6'3", guys who are low to handle. But the Johansson-Umberger-Foligno line, you know, isn't easy to handle either. Umberger and Johansson are big guys. Foligno, you know, is certainly not afraid to mix it up. So, which will he go with Bogosian against? I would anticipate it'll be Bogosian and Enstrom up against the Johansson line, and I think the Trouba Stewart against the Horton and Anisimov Jenner line. But we'll see, and it'll be interesting. You know, Brandon Dubinsky could be a key here. Will those defense, when you have a team that doesn't really have a top line, but has, you know, maybe some guys who contribute on the third line, maybe you can take advantage of Party and Ellerby.
It really is uncanny. You look at it and how they're similar to the Jets in that they don't have, you know, a dominant top line. They sort of have three lines that are all sort of similar. Some of them that can get some offensive going. I mean, I think Nathan Horton, I'll take Nathan Horton as their best player. He's, I mean, not at full strength yet, but I mean, Nathan Horton's a pretty good hockey player. The similarities between the two teams are mirror images of one another.
Similar. I mean, on the back end, you have similar as well. I mean, I think Columbus 1-6 is more talent than the Jets on the back end. And certainly more depth. Like Dalton Pruitt, and as you were going to ask Aaron Portsline about him, he's a guy who's got some, you know, some strengths to his game, and is a good defenseman.
Injured, you won't see him tonight.
Yeah,
a healthy scratch.
Yeah, but the idea is, in any event, you know, David Savard's a young guy who's cracked their top six, and David Savard's a puck mover, right? Not the greatest defensively, but their right side is a little bit is a little bit shaky defensively at times. But Johnson, Wisniewski, and Savard, they can all move the puck. and Murray can move the puck. And Tuna and Nikitin are, you know, are solid defensemen. So it's a better defense, I think, than the Jets have.
Now, Richie, you mentioned before, you know, the activating the defensemen, and they've got a lot of good offensive defensemen. Yeah. Wisniewski's more offensive-minded.
Yes,
and this is a Todd Richards team like he used to coach the Minnesota Wild. They're aggressive, and they're more aggressive on the forecheck and in the neutral zone than the Jets are, and they will be a team that uses their speed, and you're right. I mean, they have guys, you know, a guy like Cam Atkinson who's playing on the third line at times this year because of the injury to Nathan Horton. Yep. He's even been on the first line, and he's a player I really like, but they have kind of smaller, speedy forwards and varying degrees of grit. This isn't a team anywhere like the St. Louis Blues or the Chicago Blackhawks that's going to be all over you and kind of punish you in the corners or whatever, but it's a team that will take advantage of opportunities that they have. You can't take them lightly. They've beaten a lot of good teams this year. Hey, they just beat the Carolina Hurricanes. Hurricanes had won 5 games in a row.
Yep.
So the Blue Jackets are probably not a playoff team this year, Drew, but they, you know, I like where they're going. And, you know, Aaron Portsline talked about Marian Gaborik and how he won't be around. He doesn't really fit into, you know, where this team is going. And,
yep.
you know, Nathan Horton, first year of his contract, he's only played 4 games coming off of that shoulder surgery. Let's see, you know, the Blue Jackets are by no means out of the Eastern Conference playoff race.
Everybody's in the Eastern Conference playoff
Everyone's in
race.
There, but, you know, they've got a lot of good young players there. Boone Jenner is a guy that I really like. I love those kind of smaller, you know, Canadian guys that
not that small.
Well, smaller, not, you know, I guess he's 6 feet, 6'1". Smaller, I guess, by today's standards when you have Bufflin out there and Wheeler out there, but... you know, he's a good player, and he's got some offensive talent. He played for the Canadian junior team and did a lot of good things for them. So
on the Jenner,
they have some good players.
On the Jenner, I like the way they're using him right now.
Yep.
You know, you're bringing the youngster up, not putting him at center, as you mentioned, he's a center, putting him at wing with Horton and Anisimov.
Yep.
Easing him into the lineup.
Yeah, and allowing him to kind of play with those bigger guys and create an identity for himself. I thought that line actually played quite well last night. He had a goal, Boone Jenner, last night.
And again, Derek McKenzie coming off of a suspension. That fourth line won't play that much for the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
Right.
Yeah. I don't like that, but...
Well, I mean, but, you know, you're talking about two teams that are going to ride their top three lines, and you know, they're very mirror images between the two teams. Interesting.
Organizationally, I think they're different, but on paper, there's a lot of similarities.
I'm talking about now what you're going to see on the
ice. As far as their records and what they've done this year, neither team has kind of had, you know, a big winning streak or hasn't been, in the playoffs really all year. It's been kind of like, you know, they've started off inconsistently and they've stayed there. So both of these teams, again, you know, Columbus is coming into town late. They're off the second game of a back-to-back. That's an advantage for the Jets to exploit.
It is.
It absolutely is.
I agree wholeheartedly. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Tyson Nash. He's the Phoenix Coyotes TV analyst. The Coyotes are the next team up after the Blue Jackets here in Winnipeg on Monday night. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.